Welcome back. Good to have you all with us still. And we're going to look at the state of the state and see what our three journalists think about the state of the state, Martin O'Malley's speech, and where this session is going. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages and tell us what you think there. We are here in the studio with Marta Mossberg, visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, nationally syndicated columnist, Brian Sears, government reporter for the Daily Record, and its Eye on Annapolis blog, and Charles Robinson, political commentator and state reporter for Maryland Public Television. Good to have all three of you with us.
Glad to be here.
Good morning. Be here.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's start off with Marta Mossberg. What was it you said to Brian Sears?
I told him when I heard this and when I was reading it again, I just thought verbal Spanx because it's just shapewear for just all.
Charles and I are done. We're just going to. There's nothing we can say that's going to top that.
It's just trying to hide all the bad stuff, but all the bulges keep popping out. And if you take it off, as Brian said, it all falls apart. So,
what's your analysis, gentlemen, of what you saw?
Verbal Spanx. Wow, that's kind of out there. Let me just say this. Look, that speech was not necessarily just for folks in Maryland, but it was for a much larger audience. We all know that the governor is laying the groundwork for a presidential run, and he's got to find what I call universal themes that kind of hit home. You know, the big message was, look, we're going to raise the minimum wage. We're going to try and do pre-K education. Those are universal themes that play well beyond the borders of Maryland. He even owned up to a problem, and that problem is with the website, which will be the albatross that will probably hang around his head until it gets fixed.
Yeah, I mean, and I won't go to the Spanx reference, but maybe I'll I think this speech and I think this was the victory lap part two, because, you know, really what we saw last year was if you go back and look at that speech, was a considerable victory lap by the governor. But I think what he was doing was essentially punching the Democratic equivalent of his LinkedIn profile. He wanted to make sure that everybody saw that he had hit sort of the requisite things that you need to do as a Democratic governor if you want to be taken as a serious candidate running in the Democratic primary, and if you're trying to keep up with the Cuomos, you're looking at the folks that you're going to have to run against, and you want to show that you've got your bona fides, and that's kind of what he did. But also, I will say in that vein, there was nothing new or newsworthy in that speech. The first half of that speech was really about all of the things that he had done. I did think it was surprising that he went out of his way to specifically mention the failure of the website. That was kind of an unusual move. But then he talked about some of the priorities for for the rest of the General Assembly session, and they were almost like throwaways. I mean, he spent the most time on minimum wage. And then the other two items were just kind of also there. And by the way, I'd point out that those are goals that Anthony Brown is really interested in getting done this year, as he's looking forward to running for governor of the state of Maryland. I mean, I think he'd like to see the domestic violence package passed and universal pre-K passed, this year.
All of which are basically themes of what the National Democratic Party has been talking about, the universal pre-K, raising the minimum wage. It just seems like he took his cue from something much bigger than just the state, as you were saying earlier. I mean, as far as mentioning the website, I mean, he did, but he talked about accountability. He always talks about accountability, but it seems as if just mentioning that word is not the same thing as giving specifics on how he was going to be holding the website accountable, and he didn't go into that at all.
Marta touches on an interesting point, because he did talk about how the new generation wants a government that's accountable. But one of the things that so far the administration and the legislature has been distinctly avoiding at this point is in paneling any kind of a legislative panel to look at how this site failed and who's responsible. There, as a matter of fact, when you talk to legislative leaders about that, they say, look, we're more interested in getting this fixed, or we're more interested in getting people covered who need to be covered, as if you can't do that and also look at what went wrong and why.
So, look, let me just add one little thing, because Brian knows I watch certain things down in the legislature, and we had a weird conversation because in that speech—
You and who? You and Brian?
Me and Brian always have weird conversations. We have weird conversations.
But he starts them.
I drew attention to this one line in his speech that he had increased minority business in the state. And I said, whoa, where did that come from? Because, you know, I kind of track it every year, because what happens is they set goals. And let me tell you, they haven't met any of them. They've tried to. And one year they actually lowered the goals in an attempt to try and bring more folks in. And then we got a chance to talk to someone who was working around the speech, and they said, you might want to look at that. Because I said, I don't remember. And then I went to some legislators to ask them, have we really increased minority business in this state? And I got a lot of weird answers from, no, that's not what he said. He said that we increased more women business in this state. I said, we probably did that. That's an easy number to increase.
Right.
Yeah. But I was really concerned about
the numbers. Check yourself.
I'm working on it. I'm in the process of working on that process. And so that was the one piece of news. And it stopped me, because I was like, did he just say? And it wasn't in the written speech, too. I figured that out.
Well, there's a lot of things, you know, with the whether it's increasing minority business or saying that the state is number one in all these other number of areas that he mentioned. Of course, he leaves out the fact that the state is ranked one of the worst in the nation as far as business
44th, I think, is the
just
number.
Consistently. And so and then, you know, saying that he had cut spending by $9.1 billion, when he, of course, everyone knows that's not true. But he highlights it in a footnote, saying that, you know, to kind of explicate how he came to that conclusion. So how he measures things depends on how he measures things. It's sort of arbitrary. It doesn't seem like there's a real standard out there to find that information.
I think all politicians giving these speeches, no matter who they are fairly arbitrary in giving us what they want to give us, because it's their state of the state addresses, whatever they are. But I wonder what you think about why the state legislature is not concerned more about, other than Congressman Delaney, who's not in the state legislature, or Heather Mazier, who's running for governor, about the health care website. And it's failing.
It's stuff they want to get rid of. They don't want to have that. They want, if any way they can, they want to say, here's how I framed it. These are three quotes that I always got from them when I asked them about the weather. We're working on it. It's not as bad as you think it is. And the last one was, we'll fix it. And guess what? None of those answers are satisfactory. And then they pull out what I call the standard PowerPoint. Let me show you on the PowerPoint. And you know, every time you ask you see the PowerPoint, I always laugh. I go, so what's the problem? And they don't want to answer that question.
There are some, you know, to go to your question, Mark, there are some in Annapolis who believe that a lot of this is, again, going back to politics. A lot of the legislative leaders in Annapolis have already expressed support for Anthony Brown. And this is something that he has been, you know, that he has been said is, you know, the leader on. And so if it hangs around the neck of Governor Martin O'Malley, it also is equally going to hang around the neck of Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown as he's running, you know, as he's running for governor. And, you know, we come out of the legislative session roughly a month and a half before the primary. And one of the things that I think nobody except Doug Gansler and maybe Heather Mazier want is, more than maybe the Republicans, is some kind of a legislative look at, you know, with subpoena power and independent counsel that takes a look at what happened and why and how people who got contracts got their contracts. There's a lot of discussion about that, and I don't think anyone wants to see that happen coming up on an election. So you can't discount the politics here.
The establishment doesn't want – I mean, establishments always protect themselves in any situation. And this is just another – you know, this is the Democratic establishment in the state. The two outsiders are, of course, not going to have the clout to get – you know, to make that happen. And there's no competition for ideas in the state because Republicans have absolutely no power. So you're not going to get an investigation. And unfortunately – for the people of Maryland, it just means that we're just going to move on, and there's really not going to be accountability other than the word accountability.
I think the biggest thing that will go to the accountability is when the numbers come out on how much money they spent on this process. Because, first of all, they fired the person who was in charge of it, and they said, well, how much did you pay her again? And then they said, well, how much are you paying to fix the problem, and they haven't given us that number. And that's the number that frightens them probably the most, that, you know, they can't – they don't – look, you can say we're going to fix the website, but what's the number that's associated with the fix, and who pays for that?
We got to take a very brief break and come back, and I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Some of the things that kind of shocked me after my conversations with the governor and leaders of the House and the Senate at our Annapolis summit, I want to bring up in terms of what we heard in the speech and more. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Going out with Bobby Blue Bland, Ain't No Love in My Heart of the City, remembering him today.
Ain't no love, and it's shown up for pity.
Welcome back. We're looking at the state of our state. What do you think the state of our state is? At 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We're here with Mada Mossberg, excuse me, visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, nationally syndicated columnist, Brian Sears, government reporter for the Daily Record, and its Eye on Annapolis blog, and Charles Robinson, political commentator and Annapolis reporter for Maryland Public Television. 410-319-8888. Let's just pick up where we left off during the break. We were saying that why this won't – I said at the very least, people should know what went wrong since we were one of the first states out of the block with this healthcare website, developing it. Other states have just surpassed us. Maybe it's the economy of scale with New York and California know what they're doing, but Kentucky knows what they're doing apparently, it seems, as well. And so that's at least that. And you were saying, Brian –
yeah, I mean, look, I think what form that's going to actually take remains to be seen. I mean, in an interview with me, the Senate President Mike Miller told me that he believes that the citizens of Maryland deserve answers related to what went wrong, but he's noncommittal on exactly what that would look like and what a time frame is. You know, on the other side of that, you have David Brinkley, who's the Senate Minority Leader. He's the top Republican in the Senate. And David Brinkley is calling for, you know, an independent investigation with independent counsel and subpoena power. One of the things that's interesting is looking, Mark, at the money that's involved in this. There was an interesting report that actually came out from Change Maryland, which is, you know, now, you know, which is chaired by Larry Hogan, who's now running for governor. But one of the things that they pointed out was that a subsidiary, you know, United Healthcare and its subsidiaries donated $650,000 to the Democratic Governors Association while it was being run by Governor Martin O'Malley. And O'Malley was putting out press releases at the time talking about record-breaking fundraising for the DGA. And lo and behold, a subsidiary of United Healthcare, which is, by the way, actually involved in the healthcare benefits exchange. They have a dog in this fight. They offer plans through the exchange. Their subsidiary, QSSI, has been retained now to do some of the work to try and fix the website. I think that raises enough of a question that you'd want to start asking questions about the donations and whether or not there are quid pro quos. And I certainly think that there's a question there about whether or not there is some kind of a conflict of interest when you have a company that's donating that much money. You know, you can call it dark money if you want, that goes to the DGA and then gets a really lucrative contract with the state of Maryland.
I mean, those are the kind of things, though, that clearly the only way that's going to come to light is when those of you in the press, those of us in the press, but those of you especially who are working in the mediums that have that kind of broad exposure across the state need to put out there for people to start wrestling with. So I'm saying that's the only way that's going to come to light. It's not going to come to light here, clearly, in the state legislature this session.
Yeah, I don't think that the governor will be doing another state of the state speech where he starts to run down all of this stuff other than to say that the website has problems.
Well, I mean, the fact that this administration has really touted transparency as one of its key goals, to me, makes this more egregious of an issue than it would be otherwise, because Martin O'Malley has been all about putting the data on the website, but when it comes to something where transparency is really important and something so big that's a national issue, there isn't any. So how does that square with who he is in this persona running for president or higher office?
You have legislators who are resulting in filing Public Information Act requests to get information and documents on the healthcare exchange.
You know, Mark, this governor has basically built his reputation on this system called STAT. You know, he had the city stat,
state stat, and all that.
I'm going to guess that if he used that same barometer for the various things that is used, from the environment to business to whatever, that their numbers are in the tank. That's the only way I would describe it. And I think part of it, I think we all agree that this is, in the infamous word from The Wiz, don't bring me no bad news. This is the don't bring me no bad news kind of message that they want to send. And I think that, you know, you would think that this governor would be saying, well, you know, we looked at it and we targeted it. And I haven't heard him say that yet. Has he said that yet in any of his briefings?
I guess they only manage certain stats on certain programs that they want to analyze. But I mean, to me, it also brings up the fact that there was a big piece that came out on O'Malley. I think it was this past summer by some Washington magazine, basically touting him as the best manager in politics today or in government today. And this should have been all about management. This was about showing we're going to do this first so we can be a model for the nation. And this fell apart. And what does that say about his management skills?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what the president has to say, because he's going to be here tomorrow. And he'll be in Prince George's County.
In advance of his State of the Union.
We're
going to talk about on Wednesday.
Right.
So 410-319-8888, your thoughts. When I come to the phones here in just a second. One of the things that kind of – when I look at the speech, one of the things we talked about that was pretty intense on the opening day of the session was the politics around the lawyers at bail decision made by the state's highest court, and how clearly they didn't want to deal with this. They did not want to deal with the ruling, so a lot of machinations were made. And we're
still not dealing with it, Mark.
Sure.
There's no money in the budget for it, right?
Right, but they're having hearings
no money in the budget to integrate schools. They had to do it. They had to start a process because the Supreme Court made a decision.
But you know, that's not entirely true, because they are now pushing this back through the Court of Appeals in an attempt to get a more favorable decision. As the Senate President pointed out on your Annapolis Summit show, that, you know, they're hoping to get a fresh look at a bad, you know, by a new panel of judges, two of which, you know, have been replaced. But Marta makes a really good point. There's no money in the budget for this. You're talking about $25 to $30 million at the low end of an estimate. You know, I've heard, you know, $50 million, heard more. And so you're looking at a budget that has absolutely not one dime to deal with this, and $30 million with the budget as tight as it is this year, you know, that's a considerable amount of money, and to not plan for it, you know, if you don't get that decision from the Court of Appeals, I mean, where does that money come from?
Well, but the two things that hit me, I'll show you all think about this as well, then we'll move to another subject about that, was that, nobody's ever done an analysis of the money you save by not keeping people incarcerated and what that puts back in. Some people think that's a substantial amount of money. And two was the kind of very political answers that were given, especially by the Senate President, when he said that he thought that the outgoing chief judge did this to stick it in the eye of O'Malley. So he was thinking and alluding to the fact there'll be an equally political decision being made that will overturn it, which would be unprecedented in the court realm. And that, to me, also just talked about the politicization of the
enough coffee this morning.
I need more of our judicial system. That was the kind of the subtext that got to me in all this.
Well, if you don't like it, then get someone new in there, right? I mean, that's what the O'Malley administration had tried to do with the whole State Center project. I don't know if you remember all of that. Mm-hmm. Basically, they didn't like it, so they tried to sue the plaintiffs for $100 million. I mean, there's all sorts of tactics you can do to do this. I mean, to stop things or start things that you like, but it's not about what's right or what's the law.
So anything here that – let's go on the phone to you. I'm going to come back and ask you all, what do you think should have been in the speech that wasn't there in terms of what the state needs to deal with in this session? and this year, in his last year. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
How you doing, Mark? How you doing to your guests? So,
welcome.
You know, with the tragedy that happened at the mall and stuff, so this is an incident with poor legislation from the governor. So I'm a conservative, so I'm against some of the gun control. So when they really push for really strict, much more strict gun control laws, did it really serve its purpose? What it really did is to bring his base in. It's a political move, and there have been 21 homicides as of yesterday in Baltimore City. And the gun that was used was a registered legal shotgun. So all that gun control legislation that passed is feel-good progressive legislation, but it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop the violence. It's not going to stop the gun shooting. And my condolences for the people that lost their lives. But it was the gun control legislation was absolutely ridiculous. And so was the repeal of the death penalty. I don't have time to go into that. Read the Washington Times Friday's article in the commentary. Read what that has to say about repeal of the death penalty.
All right. Thank you, Danelle. I mean, thank you, Bruce.
Mark, let me, you know, I understand that a lot of people will think this is a gun control issue, but I'm going to anticipate that this week we will see a more concerted effort to deal with mental health issues. You know, we don't know what this assailant's mental health was, but, you know, this is kind of like the ringing of the bell as to if somehow this person had a mental health issue. This gives those advocates a really good standing in the state because, you know, they've tried to make sure mental health issues become a bigger part of the, if you will, the health issue. And I'm going to guess that we're going to have a push, if you will, to make mental health services more readily available. I, of course, I'm a television watcher, and I watched 60 Minutes last night, and they talked about the Virginia senator whose son was not allowed to, be institutionalized over 24 hours.
Is this
hours.
The one who shot him earlier in Charlottesville?
Shot him. And I think this becomes a broader issue for advocates on behalf of mentally ill patients, if you will.
That should have been the first issue, I think, that should have been dealt with rather than the gun control issue, because that is behind all these mass shootings. There, I mean, as you were mentioned briefly, there's been a decrease in the number of shootings, but there's been an increase in these mass shootings over in past decades. So,
right.
And those, pretty much all of them have been linked to some sort of mental health issue. And it's like, why do you, guns are easy to say, let's ban them, but it's much harder to deal with the more complex situation of people who need to be institutionalized or schools that need to be notified, or people don't want to deal with it. Maybe this will spur it, but I doubt it.
Meredith tweets in, I didn't hear much about the Department of Corrections scandal. We need total reform in that area. We need more about mental health, is what Meredith just tweeted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're still dealing with the effects of, the Black Gorilla family and the fallout from the Secretary Maynor resigned. Well, how did he do? Did he resign? How do we put it, Brian?
He officially resigned. I mean, I will tell you, I got a lot of pushback on social media when I was tweeting from the state of the state, and I mentioned, there was a stat the governor mentioned in his speech that there were, less people that were imprisoned in Maryland, compared to when he first came in. And immediately I must have gotten 10 tweets from people around the state saying, yeah, but the people who are left are all running the jails now. And I mean, so there is a real sense out there, I think, from citizens that they're aware that there is a mess in the jails. And I think that goes back to this accountability line in the speech. He touches on some of the issues, but there wasn't really sort of an outline of what the exact accountability measures are ultimately going to be. We're talking about how we're fixing the problem, but again, not really the accountability, which the governor in his speech said that, Marylanders, desperately want in this age.
I think those folks who tweeted you, I think that you know, prisons are a very tough issue for people to kind of put their hands around. And it does have to do with who gets incarcerated, how many people we have incarcerated, why, in terms of where our jails are, how else it has to do, it seems to me, with that there's always been the case that there have been two levels of control in prisons. There's a level of control that the people who run, or the management of the prison run, there's a level of control that's in the yard and in the cell block, mm-hmm. which is run by the people who are incarcerated. That's always been the case. It just happens to be that BGF is the group that it was hit the
it's management now.
It's management now as opposed to
God,
being a manager.
I hate when you say that. I mean, but they're the management group at the jail? Come on.
But that's part of the reality.
Just waiting for the sign to be out in front of the jail. It says under new management.
You know, but I think
it's like McKinsey and Company coming in.
And we forget what happened in Western Maryland with guards being indicted right. over kind of racist attacks against black inmates. So there's all this. It's a very complex issue, and it has
sure.
not been.
And once again,
none of the governors have ever put their hands around this issue, juvenile justice or our correction system.
And once again, from the bad news, don't bring me any bad news. What's the last thing you want to talk about? Hey, man, we got a problem at the jails too, and I don't think that this administration. And we went to a luncheon on the or before the start, and something that And I joke with Brian all the time about political stuff. And Senator Miller stands up and goes, Martin O'Malley is the greatest governor of the state of Maryland.
He said that.
And I said to Brian, I said, isn't that Richie? And he was like, no, it's Martin. I was going like, well, you know, look, has the governor done some great things in the state? The answer is yes. Okay. And he's taken on some challenges. And if you want to look at it from that perspective, you know, he got gay marriage when very few people thought gay marriage was going to work in this state. You know, and, you know, that's a check. Sorry. You get that one. He talked about, you know, gun legislation. Let me tell you, we saw a lot of people who were vehemently opposed to that. And guess what? He still got it through. Now, he had this unique partner in the legislators, some who went kicking and screaming. And, you know, and that's what good managers of government do. Sometimes you drag them. Sometimes you chide them. Sometimes, I don't want to say you pay them off, but you do. You kind of bring them along. So, you know, at the end of the day, does he get some good marks? Yes. Does he get some bad marks? Absolutely. And, you know, he's going to have to balance those as he moves forward.
Marty, then we'll get to the phones here.
No, I just was wondering what Miller was going to – what he's waiting for as far as the payoff is concerned down the road. But that just seems like
a – He doesn't need a payoff. He's got all he needs.
I know.
He's got a building. He's got a building with his name on it. Come on.
But, no, I mean, I think it's interesting, though, this session that both – that Miller and Bush are working together to create a more business-friendly environment in Maryland, and that they even recognize that something is wrong and want to change the estate tax. That to me is says that the people who created this mess are now realizing that it's not working the way they wanted it to. So,
which by the way, the estate tax, that's a bill that actually a Republican delegate, Sue Krebs, has been putting
right.
in for years and has never managed to get out of committee, and now will probably get out of committee. And my guess is we'll get out of committee without her name on it.
Well, it's also there's certain issues in Maryland. I mean, because it's only a one-party state, it's like the property tax issue in Baltimore City. Everyone recognizes that it's a problem now. It's just a question of how to get this through. But Maryland is one of only two states, I think, that has both an inheritance tax and an estate tax. And so what you're seeing are a lot of wealthy Marylanders not necessarily move out of the state, but they're shifting their residence. So the state is losing a ton of tax revenue that way, and they're also charities are losing a ton of money because people are spending a lot more time and giving in the place where they live now.
I mean, I've seen the stats too, but I've not seen any stats that show me that there are these masses of people of wealth leaving the state or doing residence out of the state. There are some, but not very many. And the businesses aren't leaving either. Where are you going to go? I mean, businesses have established. They have employees. They've got real estate. They're local. I mean, I think that sometimes you make too much of this.
It's a trickle. It's not a mass exodus, but I mean, it is a mass exodus in New York. It is in California, and it is happening in Maryland. We're not inviting people in. People aren't moving to Maryland. It's still an outflow. That's a bad sign.
And I think there's a lot of poaching going on from states, unfortunately, where people will say, if you're interested, call me. I mean, we saw the thing with Rick Perry who came here.
That was a joke. That was a stunt.
But I think that still brings up this whole idea that states are poaching each other's business. Not so much.
Well, Virginia is. It's right. Taking it from Maryland, definitely.
Right.
Well, look at what County Executive Kevin Kamenetz is doing. He actually is telling his delegation, we're not focusing when it comes to economic development. We're not focusing on the idea of you know, to use your word, Charles, poaching. You know, they are looking at maintaining the existing businesses that they have and making sure that the climate in Baltimore County, Kamenetz wants to make sure that the climate in Baltimore County is good for business retention rather than looking at just simply moving the pieces from a neighboring county into Baltimore County. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting tact that the Baltimore County's taking.
Let's go back to the phones and get a comment. 410-319-8888. Donnell, you're on the air.
Oh my God, thank you for taking my phone call. The gentleman that was speaking earlier, I think he's probably in Governor O'Malley's party. If you live in the city of Baltimore, there's not one thing that this guy, Governor O'Malley, has done to help the city of Baltimore. Our crime rate was just as worse. Our school systems haven't changed. We have the worst school system on the East Coast, the highest dropout rate on the East Coast. When this guy was running for mayor, he thought he was president when he was the mayor. And he has not done absolutely nothing. No one from the city of Baltimore should vote for this guy. This guy is a complete smooth politician that has one thing in mind, him running for president. Our city suffered under his jurisdiction. But never, when Governor Ehrlich was running for governor, there's no way in the world I was voting for Governor O'Malley. I'm a Democrat and voted for Ehrlich. HBCU suffered under O'Malley. Look what Ehrlich done for the HBCUs. Come on, guys.
Well, I mean, to say that O'Malley's done nothing is a stretch. To say that he's the best governor in the history of the United States of America is also a stretch. But let's talk about what you think. Two questions for you all. Let's start with what you think is left out in the speech. What has to be wrestled with in this legislature that may or may not be wrestled with?
Well, Brian and I were talking about it earlier before the show, pensions. Because he's basically permanently underfunding the pension system, and Maryland has one of the worst funded pension systems in the country. I mean, you look at all the issues that have been going on in the past year. Detroit was obviously the biggest problem, but Illinois is facing massive problems because of billions of dollars of underfunding both their teacher pensions, their health care. Maryland is just basically not funding its health care for retirees. So all of this is going to come due at some point in time. You can't just keep borrowing money to pay for things like the Chesapeake Bay or environmental issues, which O'Malley keeps doing to balance the budget.
Yeah, Mara started with Spanx, and now she's hitting me with pensions. She's stealing all my thunder. I'll go to the pension. I definitely think pensions were something. He's taking $100 million a year now out of payments that they were going to make into the pension system, which is going to delay. If everything goes according to plan, we'll delay sort of getting to that 80%, which is statutorily fully funded. An additional year, we're talking about the difference between 24-24 and 24-25, I think. And that's so far in the future, people look at that and go, oh, that doesn't really affect me. But it's $100 million a year. It is delaying it by a year. You can't predict what's going to happen in the future. And you still have this other issue of this outright sort of looting of, and every governor has done it, but we've done it a lot more in the last couple of years of taking these special funds. Program Open Space is a big one. They're taking $69 million in cash at this year in this budget out of Program Open Space, and then replacing it in the three out years with basically bond money. And one of the things that we're not talking about, which should be talked about, is at some point, the amount of money that we are paying in cash towards our debt service is growing. It's getting bigger every year. And if that somehow doesn't get reined in, you're looking at a fairly substantial property tax increase on the state property tax, which is what ends up going to covering the debt service.
And it's not right now.
And it's not covering it right now. And it was one of the reasons why Ehrlich, during his time in office, had to raise it. The legislature made it difficult for him to use cash money in the budget to pay for debt service. He had to cover the balance with the use of property tax money. I think that's a huge issue. It's something that probably should have been talked about. I have concerns that whoever is the next governor, I mean, that's going to be a big issue that, aside from the structural deficit, they're really going to have to try to figure out where the money is going to come from for debt service.
I want to talk about two things. The first is business in this state, and we've kind of hit upon it that, you know, one of the things I think Democrats have had a difficult time doing is pointing to a business that kind of lives out their ideas. You know, is it the Yahoos? Is it the Googles of the world? Or is it the hardcore manufacturing? Or is it the what I call the industrial complex? And I would have liked to have heard the governor talk a little bit more about, you know, what's that business model that the state can point to. The second thing I want to talk about is school construction. And we had a press conference prior to the start of the legislature where three of the largest jurisdictions basically came in and said, we want the same deal that you gave to Baltimore City. And that was that you would look at three out years and say, give me all that money now and let me do what I want to do with this for school constructions. And I suggested when that piece of legislation was coming through, this is a Pandora's box. You open it up and every little jurisdiction from Somerset to down in Charles County is going to ask for the same thing. And we see now that the three largest jurisdictions, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, and Baltimore County, are saying we need money for construction. Think about this, Mark. Some jurisdictions, especially some of the larger jurisdictions, have schools that were built pre-1950. Let me just tell you, you can't retrofit those buildings. I don't care what you do. You can tear down the walls and all that. You'd be better off just knocking it down and starting over because you need to look ahead. And it's one of those issues that people don't like to talk about. You know, don't build a school for the kids for the day. Build a school for the kids 10 years from now. So what does that schoolroom look like? Let me just tell you, it's a smart classroom where you can plug something up, but you have an internet service.
If we can't get that now, but if you look at schools, the school that Johns Hopkins University is building, Johns Hopkins Hospital is building on the east side of Baltimore, is the state-of-the-art school. It cost them a lot of money to build. And I mean that is what you're looking at if you want to look at at an institution that has to be built. But the question is, will we get there? I think what you all were raising about the debt service is something that's plaguing every state in this country, and this state as well. And that chicken is going to come home to roost. And I think that we've underfunded those in major ways all across this country. We've not taken care of the employees.
And rated them, too. We've rated those pensions. Those pensions.
So, that's going to come home.
I'll tease Charles and your listeners if you guys want to know what Baltimore County, Prince George's, and Montgomery County are going to do. I happen to know a little bit about the framework of the school construction budget deal the bill that they're going to put in. And I'll have something up on the blog as soon as I finish my responsibilities here with the Mark Steiner Show.
Always a tease. Always a tease.
Yeah, how about that? See, I worked that in there.
That was good. That's good. That's good.
That would be Ion Annapolis at breaddailyrecord.com.
So we look forward to all that coming up in the next couple of weeks, and we'll bring some of these folks back and all these folks back to continue our discussion about what's happening in the state. There are many the issues that we'll be covering here. We'll be covering a lot of them. Governor Martin O'Malley has said that he will join us for 2-hour-long town meetings, one on the Bay and one on education. And we will look forward to producing those and having the governor with us and, of course, our serious discussions about what's happening in Annapolis and picking out very specific issues for us to debate and talk about. I want to thank Martin Mossberg, visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute and nationally syndicated columnist. Good to have you with us once again.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Sears, government reporter for the Daily Record, and it's Eye on Annapolis blog.
Thank you, sir.
And Charles Robinson, Maryland State reporter for the Maryland Public Television and political commentator. Good to have you all with us.
Always a pleasure.
We're going to take a very brief break. Remind you on the way there that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We'll be right back. Don't go away.